Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Welcome to Fly on the Wall Finance with our host, Jamie Malm. I'm your co-host, Tony Shore, and I am excited about our show today. Anytime I get to hang out with Jamie and get to hear your great advice, whether it's financial wisdom or what's going on with the markets, anything like that. And we're going to talk today about your nest egg. And the importance of having a nest egg and how to protect it, mainly yes. How to protect it. All that money we put away in our 401ks and our IRAs, that's important. We're going to need that, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things I could talk about all day long. So it's
right.
We could be here a long time. But I think there's so much focus on the accumulation phase of our financial lives. It's where we get the most information. It's where we get the most feedback. And it's where most, I would venture to say, financial advisors, investment advisors, it's where they focus. And we don't get near enough, in my opinion, feedback, direction, and instructions on, okay, now what do I do when I'm in that 10-year period surrounding my retirement date? That becomes so important for preserving what I've already acquired, what I've already worked so hard to build. More important than swinging for the fences for big returns, becomes a playbook for how do I protect what I've already been able to save.
Well, yeah. And so we need practical steps that will allow us to protect that savings. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things that can eat away at it out there. So this is going to be a great topic to discuss. But first, Jamie, how have you been? Are you keeping busy now? I understand this is really the busy time for you, isn't it?
Fourth quarter gets to be really busy for multiple reasons. One, there's so much that clients have to do at the end of the year. So little things that they've got to make sure we want to double check with all of them to go through a checklist of sorts. Like, are you missing anything? Have you taken your RMDs? Do we need to look at anything for contributions? Or are there any tax loopholes you've missed? So quarter four is really busy for advisors. But you know, it's also football season, and that's my greatest love right now, because my baby, Ashton, who's a junior, who doesn't like it that I call him my baby anymore, but I will not stop.
He's a junior in high school.
Correct. Yes.
And you still refer to him as your baby.
Okay. Well, he is the baby of the family, and he's sure. The only boy. So, yeah. You know, spoiled, but football is his love. So we're in the mix of game day visits and Friday night football and all the fun things that come with that. So it's a great time of year. It's my favorite.
Yeah. Well, I used to play football in high school and loved it. And I love football. I love the fall. Football is just one of the many things I love about fall. But that's great to hear. I knew your son was involved in football. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I know that you and Brad love to, you know, support that, get out to the games. It's Friday nights are always fun, aren't they?
Yeah. If anybody's listening, we're actually going to be Iron Horse Financial is sponsoring homecoming this Friday. So by the time you listen to this, I don't know, it might post Friday, might post Saturday, but hopefully you will have seen us there. We have some fun things. We've got little footballs for the kids. We've got some bullpup Iron Horse t-shirts we're going to be providing.
Wow.
Yeti cup. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. Like, wow. That's fun.
We like to get out into the community and do some fun things. So
that's really fun. I think that's great. You're doing that. The little footballs. I love those. Save one for me.
Okay. You got it.
I can't make it to the game, but please save me an Iron Horse football. I want one of those. I'm going to put that up on my shelf. Okay. So, or play with it. Either one.
Little of both.
So what are some steps we can take to protect our retirement savings or that nest egg then?
Well, one of the first things that we have to look at is why that 10 years surrounding retirement is so important. In the 5 years before we retire, let's just think about that 5 year period first. The way math works is very simple. If the market drops, I may not have time that I need to recover from those losses. It's not like when we were younger and we had 10, 15, 20, 30 years before we were going to retire. It didn't really matter so much what our 401k was doing. Now we have to think about, well, when do I want to take this nest egg that I've built and go turn it into an income stream for me? If that's 5 years or less away, think about what's going to happen if the market drops 20%. If the market drops 20%, I actually have to make 25% just to get back to even, Well, the market, when I say the market, typically we're talking about S&P 500, the average return for the last 100 years is 9% per year. Well, at 9%, it would take me over 2.5 years just to get back to even. So market drops 20. It rebounds, I make 9%, it takes me over 2.5 years. So if I'm 2 years away from retirement, I'm either delaying my retirement date to give myself time to make up those losses, or I've got to consider changing my lifestyle because the money that I had planned to use to create the lifestyle, which I wanted, is now no longer there. So that 5 years before becomes really, really crucial, just as we consider math of rebounds. How long does it take to recover from a potential loss?
Well, and Jamie, every time I open up an article on finances or go online, it seems like they're always talking about how the number one fear seniors have is outliving their money in retirement. We hear that all the time. We see it. And, you know, we're all used to getting that paycheck, right? And in retirement, we have to use our own funds to generate the same money we're used to living on, getting from an employer. And I think that can be really scary for most people. It's only human nature that we're fearful about this, right?
Yeah, it is one of the biggest fears that most people have is, have I saved enough? It's one of the biggest questions we get is, can I retire? Do I have enough that I can walk away? I now no longer get a paycheck for the time that I am spending at my job every day, but my nest egg has grown big enough that I can start pulling from that. And I don't know that most people have a really good grasp on longevity and how long money really has to last, and taxes, and that difference between the distribution phase of our financial lives. What happens is people end up without a plan or a hodgepodge of assets without really knowing how are they going to work together. And then we end up with just kind of this generic advice of stay the course, you know, stay in the market, which can be misleading. I agree with that. Most times, sometimes, but it doesn't mean stand still and do nothing. It means review the plan, know your mix of investments, have a written strategy, a written income plan that fits your goals, and be ready to fine tune it based on obstacles that can come up along the way.
Right. And so it's like maintaining a truck. You don't buy it and ignore it for 10 years. You rotate the tires, change the oil to keep it running smooth, right?
Unless it's a farm truck and you're in Kansas, and then you probably buy it and ignore it. But yes, you should.
The one sitting out in the grove or behind the house up on blocks. No, not that one.
Don't look at ours, but yes. otherwise, a perfect analogy. You can't control the economy. You can't control if markets are going to take a downturn, but you can control your own strategy, your own risk level. You can control how well prepared you are for the unexpected, and that should really be the foundation of protecting your nest egg.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes sense. So what's next? I mean, obviously we're talking about protecting the nest egg. What's another thing we can do to do that?
So first things first, I would think about what you have in liquid assets. You can think of it as cash. You can think of it as a fixed account, but it's very simple, but it's powerful. If you follow or anybody's familiar with Dave Ramsey, you've probably heard him talk about an emergency fund as you are trying to get out of debt and more in the earlier stage of your life. This is like a step up from your emergency fund. There may be things that you want to do in the short term that require more liquidity than the rest of your investments. So your plan should account for short-term, mid-term, and long-term assets and functionality of each of those things. So short-term could be money that we know we want to use in the next 1 to 2 years. Maybe I know I'm going to have a little project on the house and I need access to $15,000 and $20,000. Maybe I know I'm going to have to go replace my car. Maybe I just have something that I want to do with the family, take a vacation. But if you know there's liquidity needed in the next couple of years, account for that, because we don't want to have to go take money out of our long-term account at the worst possible moment. So short-term is 1 to 2 years. Mid-term would be like 5 to 7 years. And then our longer-term money would be like 7 years plus. And we should have a plan for each of those buckets of money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So basically, you're building your own safety net so you're not forced to sell stocks at the worst possible time and really deplete your overall funds that way.
Yeah, that's a terrible position to be in. You know, if you've invested your money for long-term goals and needs, and then in 6 months or a year from now, you want to pull a chunk out, well, it may not be invested with those things in mind. So you've got to communicate to your financial advisor, and they should be proactively. It should not rely on your shoulders to be the one communicating this. They should be pulling this out of you to know
right. What
kind of liquidity do you need? What is our plan? What is our short-term money? Because we don't want to be forced to pull from our long-term assets right at maybe when the markets have taken a downturn. That's right when we need money. And now we're forced to lock in that loss. We've kind of started digging ourselves a hole, which leads us to sequence of returns risk, which we can talk about, but that's the risk there.
Yeah. Well, and so you really need to look at all these things. Starting with that cash buffer, that's good, or short-term expenses. I know that some people, when they retire, they want to take the grandkids to Disney World.
Yeah.
Well, where is that $10,000 to $20,000, depending on how many grandkids you have?
Right.
It's going to be a lot of money. Where's that going to come from? Right. So yeah, you need to make sure you plan out expenses like that. Hey, I'm going to need this amount of money within the first 6 months of retirement. Right. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. So you just want to plan accordingly. If we do have market downturns, the other benefit then is you've got some short-term money that should be invested more conservatively than our long-term. Even if you don't need the liquidity right then, we've got a bucket of money that if we need a little extra cash, we need something that would be more like our emergency fund, then we've got our plan allocated to some conservative assets that we can get to quickly if we needed to.
Yeah, I think that's important. So that's building a cash buffer. What's the next step we can take to help with this?
Portfolio mix would be the next thing that I would look at. And this is one of the things that I think is most confusing to people, because we hear, you know, kind of the 60-40 stock bond mix has been the benchmark, if you will, over, gosh, I don't know, 30, 40 years.
So for, you're talking about risk, what's at risk and low, higher risk, lower risk inside your savings or portfolio?
Yeah. And so we accumulate all these assets. We might own some stocks. We might own some bonds. Maybe our 401k was a target date fund. Well, a target date fund is simply a rebalancing of how much exposure do you have to stocks and how much do you have to bonds. The idea behind it is the closer we get to retirement, the more exposure we have to safe assets, the less exposure we have to risky assets. If we're not in something, and we'll use 401k as an example, because that's what most people have these days. If we're in a 401k and we're not getting advice or help in rebalancing that as we get closer to retirement, we may not realize that the farther away we get from when we initially chose those allocations, the farther we get from probably an appropriate allocation because our account grows. Now we're probably not 60% bonds, 60% stock, 40% bonds. We're probably getting closer to like 80% equities, 20% bonds. That could be a lot more risk than what we planned for. Sometimes I see that on the flip side, people have gotten way too conservative, right? I'm still 10 years away and I'm almost all in bonds. Well, that's going to be another portfolio mix that probably is not going to help you reach your goals. So you just have to have some guidance and some communication with an expert on what is appropriate based on my timeline, how much longer I'm going to work, and if I am nearing retirement, am I overallocated to risk? And if I am, what would be some adjustments that I could make there?
Yeah. And people have a tendency also to make emotional moves when it comes to their money and how much risk they take on. I was talking to another financial advisor yesterday, Jamie, had somebody come in and they had $700,000 in a checking account.
Yeah.
And it was the majority of their retirement savings. They got scared. They had a bunch in a 401k or IRA and pulled it all out, put it in a checking account.
Well, that's scary for a couple of reasons. One, the allocation of sitting in somewhere where we're not earning anything. But two, if it's sitting in a checking account, you just got hit with taxes. And so that's where people don't have a really good grasp on the income plan, tax diversification, asset allocation, all of those things should be working together to help you reach your goals.
Yeah, you need to have a good mix or balance of risk versus safety. That's way too far the other way. Some people, they probably come to you and you've probably seen that where they have a bunch of money just sitting in the bank, which is just a step above just putting it under the mattress. And then you have the people on the other side where it's all in risky stocks or all in one stock where it's all at risk. So balance is important, but that brings up, I know you wanted to talk, another issue is probably dealing with inflation then. And inflation is what's going to kill that person with all that money in the bank, right? I mean, plus, I just want to add, the banks only insure up to usually FDIC only covers $250,000. So there's a risk if that bank would happen to fail, then only $250,000 of that money is insured by the FDIC too. So
that was kind of a hot topic. What was it, maybe 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah. Because
we had a kind of a run on the banks with some failures there, which I, at least in my lifetime, I don't remember it being a thing really. You know, it was something that we maybe talked about, but rarely did you hear about a bank actually
failing
and people losing money because they had too much and missed out on the FDIC insurance. So that's a good point. I think the bigger risk though, that most people are going to fall into, we call it losing money safely. You know, you have your money sitting somewhere. If you've heard us talk about the color of money, for your listeners on the show, you know, we talk about red money, yellow money, green money, red money being the money that is at risk, green money being your safe money. Neither of those are all good, all bad. So they each have pros and cons. The pro to green money is, hey, it's safe. I got scared in the market. I have it in my checking account. Well, I know it's not going to lose anything, but I am losing money safely because on the average, inflation is going to go up 2 to 3% per year on average, not the last few years, but on average, that's what we can account for. So if your bank account is earning less than that, and if they aren't already, they probably soon will be. We talked about the Fed's lowering rate or the Fed lowering rates last week. So we're going to start to see those maybe 4.5 high yield savings accounts come down. We're going to get back in that range where we simply lose purchasing power. Maybe it's cut in half over a 25 to 30 year retirement because we had too much of our assets sitting on the sidelines or in cash or in the bank. So we've got to build some inflation protection into your plan for your lifestyle is going to get squeezed. You're not going to have the ability to cover basic expenses like you want.
So what can people do to combat inflation?
Well, one, keeps some exposure to growth, right? Historically, stocks outpace inflation over time. So having at least your long-term bucket of money, the money that we've got 10 plus years to account for, that helps preserve that purchasing power. But if we look at our safer money options as we get, you know, in retirement, and we're in that maybe 10 years surrounding retirement that we're talking about so much, well, we also have to balance that with preserving our nest egg. We don't want to have all of our assets or even the majority of our assets exposed to loss. So there are safe options out there that can adjust for inflation each year, giving yourself a pay raise. So however you do it, you should have a written income plan. You should have an advisor that creates a written income plan that gives you a built-in increase for income, primarily because years ago, retirees maybe spent 10 years in retirement. You know, a 65-year-old retired, they maybe lived to 75. We had 10 years to account for it. We don't worry or talk so much about inflation. Now we're seeing 60, 65-year-olds, they might live 25, 30 years. So accounting for inflation to protect just handling basic expenses is more important than it's ever been.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, and this is kind of an aside, but it has to do obviously with investing and being diversified. The international markets have gone crazy this year. Yeah. In fact, they've outperformed U.S. stocks by quite a bit, right?
Yeah, that's something that we are getting asked about more this year than we have in years past, simply because they have done so well. And that kind of goes back to, well, what's right for me? What kind of mix of investments should I have? Here's the mistake that I see a lot of people make. They think they're diversifying and they own all these different things. Maybe it's a mutual fund or an ETF, or they own a stock. And when we actually go through and we do the analysis of their holdings, we'll see Microsoft, for example, or Amazon or Apple. We'll see it show up 7 times, 8 times, 9 times, like you own it again and again and again and again. You own it in all of these funds. And so people think they're doing what's right and they're diversifying, and really they're just buying the same things over and over, not realizing it. International stocks, great way to diversify away from the things that we do by accident, which is probably buying US stocks over and over. But we want to be cautious of the percentage as a max that we have, because international is typically going to be more volatile than US. Mm. Can it work in our favor? Absolutely. Do we know which sector, international or US, is going to do well in the future? We don't. So we diversify. Our money managers have called that, you know, diversification, otherwise known as always having something to apologize for. But it's it's really the best way to protect yourself. And I would say 10 to 15% is probably the max of international exposure you want. If we're talking about that 10-year window around retirement where we're zeroing in on trying to protect your assets.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and plus if you hear about something being hot, by the time you hear about it, it's usually too late to capitalize on it. Right. Yeah. And people use emotions. Oh, this is hot. I'm going to get into that at its height. You know, you're going to sell low not what you're supposed to do, but that's what human nature leads a lot of people to do. So what's another way that we can combat this, that we can actually protect our nest egg?
Well, I would look at spending plans then, because you can invest, you can save, you can have your allocations, but if your spending goes unchecked, we can only preserve so much with withdrawals that just come repeatedly. I've had some clients that would say, well, I'm not planning on using this for income in the first 6 months. I might get a call every couple of weeks. We want to pull out 5. We want to pull out 10. We want to pull out 15. And we have to halt and say, okay, let's talk about this, because you're on a pace now in which you can't sustain it. So you should make sure that you have realistic expectations of what your nest egg can support. And that's the primary reason why when we create an income plan, we are only pulling from accounts that are insulated from loss. We do not want to be reliant upon investment accounts that can be up and down with our withdrawals. Why? Because if the market is down and we're relying on that account for a monthly paycheck, well, now I've got to take my withdrawal the same month the account is down. I start digging myself a hole. And that's extremely detrimental to the first 5 years after retirement. So we talked about the 5 years before. The 5 years after is when spending and withdrawals and where those withdrawals are coming from make the biggest impact on how long that money can last. It is terrifying if you ever look at a comparison on how quickly the switch can flip on, yep, you're good to go, to oops, we had two bad years and we also pulled returns in those 2 years. That's really, really difficult to recover from.
Yeah, that can run you out of money quick and derail your retirement plans. And that's the big fear we talked about at the beginning of the show, running out of money in retirement. So don't do that. You don't want to be pulling large amounts out of your accounts when they're down. So there are ways to plan around that. And so, but we can't talk about retirement, Jamie, without bringing up Social Security. There's a lot of fear around that lately. In fact, you know, we hear so many things like the sky is falling. And I mean, when you hear it with this kind of gravitas.
Here's another truth. Social Security is dying.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's uplifting.
Yeah, yes. That's not too good.
That's not good. It is something we get asked about a lot. You know, do I think Social Security is even going to be there? I don't know long-term the answer to that ultimately, but do I think the people that are retiring in the next few years are going to have it? Absolutely. We'll see what happens for, you know, maybe the generations younger than me. But Social Security has so many nuances with it that if you're worried about, you know, gosh, is it going to be there? Maybe I should take it early. Maybe I just don't really understand what my options are. If you take it early, you are locking in about a 30% permanent reduction in lifetime benefits. And here's the piece of it that a lot of people don't think about. Husband and wife, they each have Social Security. Maybe they're close to being even, but the husband's is slightly more. Husband says, nope, I'm out of here at 62. We've got her Social Security. We're fine. I'm going to lock mine in. If she outlives him, he has just locked in her permanently reduced survivor benefit. Because when the first spouse passes, the surviving spouse keeps the higher of the two Social Security payments. And if you take it early, and you've locked in that 30% permanent reduction, it's not just for you, it's for your surviving spouse. So you want to be very, very sure about what your options are. And is there any other way to skin the cat before you go take early Social Security? Plus, are you sure you're done working? Because if you are going to work and you're not full retirement age yet, they are going to penalize you and withhold Social Security based on you earning too much money. So lots of things in there that we need to be cautious of as we're figuring out what the foundation of that income plan is going to be and how Social Security plays a role in that.
Right. And that's where a customized Social Security strategy based on your personal situations, you and your spouse, it's not a one size fits all answer. And you have the Social Security maximization report you can run that's based on personal information that'll show a person when the sweet spot is for them to file, the different spousal filing strategies. I think that's really important. So, and yes. You know, you've mentioned retirees are working longer, we're living longer. Sometimes we're working longer by choice, sometimes by necessity, right?
Well, yeah, we just talked about that a little bit on if I'm going to be taking Social Security early and I'm pretty sure I'm done working, maybe I just don't want to work for that company I worked for the last 20, 25 years, but sure. Maybe I'm not really done with part-time work, or maybe I've got a hobby that I could turn into income. Little things like that. One, they should be considered because we want to know the impact of working on taking Social Security. But two, if you are open to something like that, that can help bridge the gap between retirement and actually claiming Social Security. It helps keep your portfolio intact longer and delays us having to pull income from that nest egg. So we want to look at the benefits of just what fits your lifestyle, what fits you, what kinds of things are you open to, and make sure we're exploring all options.
Yeah. And that's good because working longer can help build up that nest egg and protect it in the future. Well, hey, this has been a great show, but what do you have for us before we go today for our listeners, Jamie?
Well, you've heard me talk about before how important I think a written income plan is. I think it is crucial. It is probably the number one thing that I would get in place if you are nearing retirement. How do you know if you are going to be able to retire, what kind of lifestyle you can live if you've not had somebody put together a complete and comprehensive written income plan? So if you're listening to the show and that's something that you'd like to take advantage of, you can call our office. It's 620-377-6456. You can go online. It's ironhorsefinancialservices.com. You can request an appointment out there or message us. But reach out. If that's something you want us to put together, we do it at no cost. We don't ever charge fees for any kind of initial planning like that we do for new clients or prospective clients. It's something that we do to engage with community members. And we hope that, you know, eventually somebody will say then after some initial work with us, hey, you guys have done a great job. We'd like to work with you. And if not, that's okay too. At the very least, you've got a written income plan you can walk away with.
Well, there you go. So what's that phone number and web address one more time for our listeners?
Yes, it's 620-377-6456. And the web address is ironhorsefinancialservices.com.
All right. Well, that does it for today's episode of Fly on the Wall Finance with our host, Jamie Malm.
See you next week, everybody. Thank you.
That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.